Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
I was so sick of living a lie, pretending to be someone I wasn't. I wanted my crew to know me for who I really was. I thought maybe if they did, I would finally be safe. And Starfleet would finally understand Alarians better.
So after all of it, you still wanted Starfleet to accept you. Why?
When I was 5 or 6, I remember a Starfleet crew visited. They were all so different from one another. So many crew members from so many planets. It was beautiful. I thought, if all those people from all those worlds can work together, side by side, maybe I could too. Maybe I could be a part of something bigger than myself.
All right, podcasting time. Let's do that. Let's do the podcasting.
The podcast.
It's been a while since we've actually been here podcasting.
Yeah.
And
we were gone a long time.
I'm reminded of that fact because Jesse had to remind me of some basic pre-podcasting functions that I had forgotten. But we have tested all of our microphones, and we've fiddled with our levels, and we've twisted dials and shit like that.
Shit like that.
All that business.
Yep.
And so we can say...
Twist it.
We're back.
Pop it.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast is back.
Pull
from
it.
Brief vacation.
I never left.
Bop well, it. Yes, Dan didn't leave. And plus, you all got content because we pre-recorded content. An excellent two-part conversation. Excellent, if I must say so myself, which I may.
But you mustn't.
Wait, what was this?
I'm talking about our two-part discussion of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
When did we do that?
Jesse's still coming down from
what
his vacation.
What else aren't you guys
high.
Telling me?
So the
did you black out again at the during the podcast? He's gotten one of your Jesse rages, and you like blacked out.
So yes, that two-part episode or two-part discussion that consists of two individual episodes in which we discussed Star Trek III: The Search for Spock. Ooh. That was good.
Ooh.
That was really
ooh,
good.
Ooh. That was both
what's
well
this?
Said.
What's this? Ooh. Ooh.
It's a new thing I'm trying out.
Ooh. No, this. What's this from? Ooh.
Are you talking about Car 54?
Yeah.
Are you Officer
Gunther Tootie?
Gunther Tootie?
Yeah, Gunther Tootie.
Is that a show from 70 years ago?
Where are you?
Yeah, it was like one of those shows that you kind of see sometimes, but not usually. I've never seen an... Oh my gosh, we're already getting off track here.
Back in the day, yeah.
I never saw an episode of that Green Acres show.
Oh, Green Acres is fantastic.
I watched it religiously. I used to watch all of those fucking shows,
But you didn't see Green Acres.
In black and white and color, but I somehow missed Green Acres. And it's not like I avoided it. It just never popped up in my feed.
But
which back then was like...
You ever watched that?
The TV Guide?
Popped up in your feed? You mean Nick at Night, which is what... Like the only thing that we could watch.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, but yes, you're right. That is a minor digression.
Maybe we were on different sleep schedules.
Okay. Well, okay. So this, okay. Just to return
maybe
to get
I was
everyone
in,
back to the baseline.
Maybe I was in Taekwondo class.
To get everyone back to the baseline. Because this is a podcast.
We're playing baseball.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Maybe I was like pushing a hoop with a stick down the street.
This is episode 192 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Because I'm into those shows.
And we are back from a very brief break, but we hope you enjoyed that Star Trek III conversation. And if you haven't heard it, go check it out. It's a really good set of podcasts.
So just to remind you, this podcast is made up of me, Dan, and...
Space Command Representative Zostlago and Starfleet Commander Chip.
That's three.
And Commander Ed Zircon from Spaceballs.
Zostlago.
Some Commander Zircon.
Zostlago. Chip.
Doesn't it sound like she's saying chip? It's funny. Like,
I do think what is she saying? What does
she says chiv.
Chiv?
But it sounds funny as chip because
I think she's referring to him as he's like Chip the Vulcan.
Wasn't
that the Hardy Boys? Didn't they have that? Oh no, that was Chet. The Hardy Boys' Chet. Dumbass friend was Chet,
so,
who was always getting them in trouble. Was apparently overweight, and that frequently was the reason he got them in trouble for some reason. Yeah,
back those books back then.
Yeah, them 1950s books.
I just thought it was funny that they had this really alien name and then another name that sounded like Chip.
Yeah,
it's like, okay. It was Chip.
All right.
You know?
We're Base all over
Command
the place.
Representative Zostlago and Starfleet Commander Chip.
Okay. See, isn't that funny? That's just funny to me.
It is very funny.
Right.
But let's
Zostlago.
Let's Chip. Orient people to what's happening.
Xenobiologist Steve
in this podcast this week. Okay, so brief review and recap. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 192 of the podcast, and what we are doing is we are playing a bit of catch up.
Good.
We're playing a bit of catch up this week.
Why not?
Because since Jesse and I were out of town.
Must be nice.
And in fact, out of the country, and we were not able to arrange for an adequate, satisfactory recording of podcasting while we were gone.
That would have been really difficult.
We have to catch up with the new episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We did cover the first episode, The Broken Circle, a few weeks back.
I watched them earlier today.
In this episode right now, we will be discussing Ad Astra per Aspera. Okay.
Which means?
To the stars through hardship.
Through hardship or through struggle.
Astra.
Yeah.
And then near at the end, basically like pulled the whip around and then said.
Through her hardships.
Yeah.
Una sought the stars.
Yeah, oh. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
See? She flipped it all around.
Yes, she flipped it and reversed it.
She
flipped it and reversed it.
She backwards reversed it.
She flipped it and reversed it. And it was indeed worth it.
It wasn't a flip backward reverse. Okay. It was just a backward reverse or a flip reverse, whichever.
So this episode, 192, we will be discussing Star Trek Strange New World Season 2, Episode 2.
Dan, did you know that it was Episode 192?
Ad Astra per Aspera.
Isn't that something?
Is going to be a slightly embriefened episode.
192?
Yes, this is 192. We're trying to catch up.
Gosh, we're getting close.
Episode embriefened.
In the next episode, which will also be embriefened, we'll discuss Tomorrow, which I think is the name of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 3.
Yeah, that was
something. And then with episode 194, we'll get back on our schedule. Fully featured episode discussing Among the Lotus Eater.
Has anybody seen that one? That one's out today.
I have seen it.
Oh,
awesome.
Shit.
I have not seen it yet.
No spoilers. But we'll discuss that in episode 194. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. So now that you know the plan, we can start with this week's episode. This week's episode was Ad Astra per Aspera. And
to the stars through hardship.
Yes. And it was a very well done episode. Yeah. Really good. I mean, there's not that much to say.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you like it? I liked it.
It was really good. The writing was good. It was a good courtroom episode.
Yeah,
not perfect, but it was good.
It was. Yeah, I appreciate.
I thought it was reminiscent of the the TOS episode we discussed a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And that's one reason why we watched Court Martial is we had expected this episode was coming up.
I thought it was like the second time I watched it, I enjoyed it a little more. Maybe I just was paying more attention, but there was some clever bits to the case. There was also some silliness too, but it was interesting. We were talking last season about how quickly they were going to resolve this Una situation, which I guess they just did.
Yeah.
But maybe that's why they didn't play it as the first episode, because normally the part two of because this is now officially a two-parter. Right, like you could call those two-parters, even though they're separated by one episode.
I mean, I don't know about that. In an official sense.
So that's one of my point though. Is if they was episode one, people would have said that's a two-parter.
Yeah, like but a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
and a resolution.
But what they did is they artificially made it seem serial. Is that right? No, that's the one.
which artificially
is the,
flavored
which
syrup?
Is the one which is episodic.
I'm taking
issue
with this whole term artificially because it's like this is a work of art.
I know. Well, it's wait a minute.
It's not, all artificial. It is all artifice.
Okay, God, don't just, you know you're bishing. You're bishing.
I'm bishing.
Look.
I don't even want to know what that means.
I'm just trying to think of like why they made it episode two, and so it feels like it's kind of trying to make it more.
I think
instead of calling it
I think you answered your own question.
Instead of calling it a two-parter, they separate it by one. That way, they can call it more serial because they can say, "Oh, it took two episodes to resolve this," but it really only took one, and they could have done it last episode. So it was either it was either a bold choice to begin episode one of season two without. It was a bold choice what they did to not address what happened too much before, but at the same time, maybe they were like, let's stretch this out, figure out a way to stretch this out, the intrigue
I think it was more along the lines of, it's a fairly swift resolution in the one sense, but by pushing it out a little bit, it goes to the point you were making initially, Dan, which is like, does it make it feel less swift, less in a rush if they space it out by an episode?
Mm-hmm. That's basically what I was saying. I guess this was like that, court martial, because they had the same sort of love interest lawyer situation. Similar, sort of a variation on it. Pike.
Right, those two are still hanging out.
Pike had Battelle, and while she wasn't going against him, or whatever you call it in lawyer speak, she wasn't.
She wasn't going against him.
He wasn't the defendant, and she wasn't the plaintiff. She wasn't the attack lawyer for his defendancy.
The prosecutor.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So in the episode court martial, which we discussed a few weeks ago,
Kirk and I can't remember her name. What was her name?
It was Shaw.
Shaw, that's right.
Lieutenant Shaw.
Yeah.
Or Lieutenant Commander Shaw, perhaps. Because we commented that she might be Captain Shaw from Star Trek Picard. Maybe she was his grandma.
Grandma Shaw.
Grandma Ma Shaw. Meemaw Shaw. She might have been Meemaw Shaw. We were discussing saying maybe she was Meemaw Shaw.
You're being funny.
This all sounds...
I am being very funny.
A little bit familiar.
But yes, so in that episode, the prosecutor had a prior... presumably sexual relationship with Kirk, although it wasn't a concurrent one.
But didn't they play, it did seem like she was down to clown. They played the romantic music, and I thought they did kiss during that episode. Did I make that up?
No, no. In Court Martial, it has that hilarious Arrested Development ending where they have this intimate romantic moment, and then they kiss, and then the camera pulls back, and they're on the fucking fully staffed bridge.
Thanks for that.
But yes, Dan, you are correct. There's a similar vibe going on here. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's gonna
similar.
No. And that's something that's going to keep coming up on this season of Star Trek, the new world.
What's it called?
Oh, these worlds, they're so strange. They're so fucking strange.
New.
And many of them are new. new to you. They're not new to the people on the worlds. It is a bit colonial.
They already been there.
There's a colonial tinge to these.
I discovered America.
Strange new worlds. Jesus, I just realized that. Strange new to who? Come on. Strange new worlds. New to these white people who are finding these worlds. They're like, look at this world.
So terra-centric.
We're going to call this world Vega 3.
All right, you've made your point.
Meanwhile, the people on the planet are like, dude, we're not called that.
Yeah,
we call ourselves this whole other thing. It's like, hey, got any dilithium down there? This is the 22nd century Starfleet. There's none of that 24th century bullshit. No, 23rd century Starfleet. Yeah, but they're still all about they're all about the dilithiums. Mm-hmm. They're all about the strategic locations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I apologize for that minor digression, but I had sort of a philosophical realization there at the moment about the title Strange New Worlds. Strange? Mm-hmm. Who decides whether something's strange?
Are we going on this again?
Who decides?
Don't you think we should sidebar this conversation?
It's very subjective.
All right. Fair point, Dan. I think this episode has given you a lot of ammunition for this and future audio drops. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Audio tomfoolery.
There was a similar thing with Pike and Battelle, but like he wasn't on the stand, or he was on the stand, but he wasn't the defendant.
She still got to cross examine him a little bit.
Yeah.
When she was.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there
we're just not even going to talk about. We're just going to obliquely reference a conversation.
That's right.
We're back in business, boys. We haven't forgotten how to podcast whatsoever. It's like no time has passed at all.
So actually, you knew something was going down because when they were having lunch together and Pike was like, I'm in the best position to speak to her character. And then Patel was like, oh yeah, when'd you two meet? That was the moment. Like, yeah. I knew, like, oh, she's setting him up for, yeah, like, a...
She's
like
doing some lawyer ball business.
She's going to lawyer ball him.
And she's going to lawyer ball his ass.
Yeah. Royal ball. And so...
Vulcan bros.
Okay. So, you know, now you've played a tape about something that I want to comment on, but we should conclude the whole thing with Batel and Pike. Their arc is interesting.
Okay, right. So what you were saying is she did put him on the stand, and she did a whole...
I mean, the fake stand.
Fake stand, yes.
Because he was probably eating, like, some steak or something. I didn't pay attention to what he was eating, but I figured he was probably eating some steak.
I think that guy eats a lot of steak.
And he does that thing where he, like, cuts the meat and then picks up a piece of the meat with the fork, and then he's like pointing at people with the fork, mm-hmm, with the chunk of meat, yeah, on it, and he's making points. He's like, I'm gonna make some points.
Meaty points.
And then he chooses his mouth open.
Yeah. I can't vouch for whether or not that happened in this episode.
Incidentally, she said the word awful twice in that exchange. The first time was...
Look awful.
And then...
You look awful.
And then...
That must have been awful for you.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it was in context to? This isn't a game show. I'm just thought of that question. I can answer that for you.
Okay.
You give up?
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
So
look awful.
Because, I mean, I didn't think giving up was an option since you framed it as not part of the game show style.
Oh.
You weren't asking a game show style
so
question.
What part of context was that? What was that in relation to when she said, you look awful?
What, when she sees him sitting there and he looks all sad?
Yeah, yeah. And he's what does he say in response to that?
He's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck you. Come on.
Basically. Yeah, you got it. He actually said,
thanks for that.
That was when he said,
thanks for that.
The other one.
That must have been awful for you.
Do you know what that was about?
When she was talking about how he was raised as like a very happy, upper middle class white boy.
I think there was actually some bad stuff in there, though, but I can't remember what it was.
What,
do you think him? Was she being sarcastic? I don't think she was being sarcastic.
Well, what was she talking about?
Well, I
met Mr. Holder of the context, Mr. Keeper of the context. You got
context
your little
keeper.
You got your little box over there.
Yeah.
Open the lid. Context. Open the lid and let the little context worms out.
Okay. Well, she was talking about
that context.
I
want to slurp on some of that context. What? What are you talking about? An ad? Are you looking up YouTube videos now?
No, I'm looking up this website had an ad. What were we asking? We were asking. Oh yeah, it must have been awful for you. It was, I gave a speech to her academy class forever ago.
Okay, that's right. She was implying that she was using sarcasm to imply the opposite of what she was stating.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing that a Spock or a Data may not understand. They might not understand that type of humor until they're explained the algorithm of, like, oh, if somebody says something with a certain tone, then you actually means the opposite, in which case she was implying that he, in fact, loves to give inspiring speeches.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to go all that far, but, you know.
Because he's a captain. That's how you get to be a captain.
That is how you get to be a captain, giving inspiring speeches.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else about the Batel business, the Pike Batel business?
No, I guess that's about it. That's all the Batel that I got.
It is interesting that this is not the first time we've seen Batel. It's not going to be the last time we see Batel. This character is serving as another example of how they're structuring Strange New Worlds more broadly as a largely episodic show, but with these serialized elements, and kind of doing some of the Deep Space Nine style thing where you're introducing these characters like Admiral April and Captain Batel and et cetera, where they can, you can bring them back and forth as needed to tell these stories,
right,
and kind of like strengthen things.
Which sort of like, as a different angle you're looking at it than what I expressed earlier about like how if it was put in as the first episode of season two, they would have called it a two-parter.
Yeah.
But now they put in episode two, now it seems more serial.
It's just well,
it's but like the thing is I don't know.
It's not season-long serial.
I'm trying to figure out their motivation for putting one in front of the other, because it just, to me, it seems like they were trying to make it seem more serial than it was, but I don't know.
They was trying to mess with you.
Watching this show, made me think of sort of the difference between true serial storytelling, like in Picard and Discovery, and the sort of semi-serialized episodic style, more in the Strange New Worlds and Deep Space Nine vein. I'm watching Strange New Worlds, and I cannot wait for the next episode. I'm so looking forward to the next episode. When I'm watching Discovery or Picard, it's not that I don't want to see the next episode. It's I'm looking forward to the end of the season, because that's when this story is going to end.
Right.
I can't wait till I have access to all those episodes. And I'm not arguing that they should be released all at once, like on Netflix necessarily. But that is, it's a slightly different vibe compared with Strange New Worlds or Lower Decks is another good example, where and to a lesser degree, maybe Prodigy, where I'm really like, oh, I wonder what story they're going to tell us next week. Here's the title of the next episode. I wonder what it's going to be about. I'm super excited to learn what that's going to be about. Whereas when you're watching one of the more serialized ones, you have some idea where it's going. You might not know exactly, but you have some idea where it's going. And until it's the finale, you have no idea what information you're going to get or how it's going
to
conclude.
Well, so it's nice to have a beginning, middle, and end to each episode, as opposed to a beginning, a middle, a dip, and then like a rise. And like each episode is like a dip and a rise, but there's never really any conclusion.
It's just a different form of storytelling, and I'm finding it's sort of like more relaxing in a way to watch Strange New Worlds or Lower Decks, where you're like, I have confidence that I'll be entertained by the next episode, and I can't wait to find out what it's all about.
Yeah, they certainly have done like a good job of making each episode its own sort of, what you basically just said, it's like, what character are we going to focus on this week kind of deal.
Yeah.
And so they
and telling different types of stories, like this is a courtroom drama.
Yeah.
It's a lot of talking and like two or three different sets basically, which is cool.
Oh, yeah, I was also going to say, like, court martial, they had the, sorry, I sort of like busted in on what you were saying.
No.
And because, like, I remembered something else, they had the hand thing.
Oh, yes.
The hand, the lighting, the truth telling
hand
bell.
Machine. They had a lot that they harkened back to the court martial, with the bell and the lie detector hand thing. The ding dings, the dong dongs. Okay, how about this? Let's take a quick break. Now that we've heard the bell.
When you hear the bells again, you'll know that the break has ended.
You can play the bells, and then some sort of clip that says court is now in session. when we get back from the break. We'll be right back.
This court is now in session.
Okay, welcome back. We are back from the break. Back to discuss what was it? Ad Astra. Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
How do you
two,
please to these two. Charges of
Yes.
Not guilty
indeed. What do we think about Neera and what we learn about her? And her background as an Illyrian. So Captain Pike, at the beginning of the episode, it's where we see the most non-courtroom part of the episode, where Captain Pike is going to... He's trying to go get a lawyer. Right? He wants to get a lawyer. We heard sort of a reference to this person in the Broken Circle, an oblique reference. So he's trying to find this person who he thinks will do a good job defending Una. And he is correct, as it happens. So he goes to what was the name of the place? Was it Vega or something? What was the name of the nebula business that he went? They went to
the place with bad air.
Yeah, the planet that they designed purposefully to like be shitty for regular old humans and stuff.
Oh, Illyria?
Yeah, but it wasn't. I don't think it was Illyria. They were Illyrian, but it's
Illyria.
Not like
oh,
you know.
Yeah, why? Yeah, I didn't understand why they had to have like shitty breathing there. Like, I don't know what they were. I know they can. Why did they do it just so they could be exclusive? Like, you have to be have superpowers to live here or something.
It was one of the things that was slightly confusing, because the implication was, or at least when you get all the information, is that the Illyrians set it up so that they could live there, that they could have their they were genetically modified so they could be live there just fine, but that is troublesome for. At least humans, regular old humans, and this is where it gets a little confusing with like the human versus Illyrian versus truly alien versus the modified.
Volterra Nebula.
Ah, yes, the Volterra Nebula.
Neighborhood.
But regardless, we learn a little bit about the Illyrians here. And yeah, the idea was that it was meant to keep people away. Again, maybe a little confusing. Did provide for that really both dramatic and funny scene of Pike refusing to leave the waiting room.
Right.
Which is like a Boston Legal type.
Yeah, he should have brought an extra battery, but I guess, you know.
I don't think it was a battery. I think it was a filter.
It was a whole filter, but it was powered by like what I assumed to be a battery or some kind of gas.
Yeah.
Maybe he should have brought an extra tank or whatever was juicing him.
Yeah. They probably needed a little extra gas.
A little extra.
Juice tank.
Extra juice. He went to the office with Neera and she was all like, he was like, you know about the case? And she's like, yeah, I do my homework. And he's like, oh.
Yeah.
And then when he's leaving, he pulls I do my homework too. And I can't remember what he said, but he said something
what he was playing on was he was basically saying, look, here, this is your old friend and she needs help. Do you want to help her? That didn't seem to work. So then he was like, well, how about this?
Oh, he was
you have this greater goal.
Yeah, and exactly.
And this would help that greater goal.
Yeah. He said, you need help in this area.
Right.
It's like, as I do my homework too.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then she did that. And then Una was pissed off because she was like, you're not defending me. And Una framed it as and Neera frames it as, you know, she's, you know, fighting a cause, but Una framed it as you have hatred. You know, which is interesting because like that's different perspectives
but and both can be true. I mean, it can be a combined, like one can lead into the other.
Well, exactly. But there's this idea of, you know, like fighting for good or just being or what you think is good is actually born out of hatred, you know. And so road and good intentions is paved with
the road
candy corn or something.
Yes. The road to hell candy is paved corn. With good intentions. Like the road to good intentions.
Is paved with candy corn.
Which, by the way, fuck candy corn. And for our international listeners, for our international listeners who don't know about candy corn,
it's just like marzipan.
Be thankful.
Isn't it like kind of like marzipan?
First of all, it's not. No, second of all, I don't like marzipan either.
I mean, it's not. It's
too
not
sweet. Marzipan is made out of almonds. The corn business, the candy corn.
Yeah, I know.
It's much sweeter.
No, I know. It's totally.
It's made of rotten human teeth.
Okay.
Ground up and put into a mold.
I know that they're made from different horrible things, but they do interesting things with those teeth.
It's just corn syrup and just chunks of rotten teeth. That's what it is. My international friends,
I can eat candy corn about once a year and then I'm over it. But I never have seen.
What time of the year do you eat candy corn?
Usually around Thanksgiving.
Ah, so you don't even eat it during Halloween time.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
I was gonna say you just eat it. You buy it at the store when it's on discount.
Yeah, that's kind of my style.
Meanwhile, Jesse over here is apparently just knocking them back like pills all year round.
Like pills.
I am cool with candy corn. I'm not cool with Peeps. Those are weird.
Oh, I like Peeps.
Lame.
I like Peeps better than candy corn.
Oh my god, Jesse's like Mr. One Up over here.
Normally Jesse's the one that doesn't like shit. Don't get this guy started on mayonnaise or eggs, but he's gonna stick a bunch of candy corn into Peeps and just not swallow the whole jank
down. That's a good idea.
Gross. But
they're
all
spiky.
It is fun to put up.
Do you ever have any of those alternative candy corns that are shaped like other things, like stars and weirdness? They made other shaped candy.
Oh, did they make like jack-o'-lanterns?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. It's weird though because
those are gross too.
It's weird because what changes about it is the thickness of it changes. So like it changes the whole texture. Same with Kit Kats.
Yeah.
Kit Kats a little different, but because they have an outer coating. Yeah. Now the coating just gets off.
The big Kit Kat's no good.
Oh man, yeah. That's
it's kind of the same thing with Reese's. When you got the wrong size Reese's.
I'm better.
Because the thing is three-dimensional. You know, if you have a sphere, the volume thing. So the issue is that as the size of the Reese's changes, the actual amount of peanut butter in three dimensions compared to the outside chocolate changes it's significantly.
The surface area to mass.
Yeah,
ratio.
It's like 3/10 pi r cube.
Or like king-size whatchamacallit is different than the regular kind of whatchamacallit.
That's just fine, though. That's just rice.
I prefer big big cats to the tiny extra small Kit Kats.
I don't like the extra small Kit Kats.
Yeah, I don't like those. No. It's not enough.
Those
not
are
too
pointless.
Much kit and not enough cat or whatever. But,
yeah.
You know, I read some law about, like, the further you go north, the larger the animal gets. Like, you'll find deer that are bigger because some kind of law about surface area to mass and keeping warm. It's like you have less surface area exposed to your mass means it's easier to keep warm in colder temperatures. But then I start thinking about, like, what about elephants and shit? They live out in hot weather.
They got them big ears to radiate them heats away.
That's true. What about rhinos?
Mm-hmm.
Their horns? They keep all the heat in their horn?
No, rhinos have the floppy skins.
I don't know if that's enough.
They're lower to the ground.
I mean, I think it's just fine.
I'm just saying. I'm just trying to.
You're like criticizing. I don't think it's going to be enough. You're like, I don't know. I don't know about
that
the fucking
sound right to me.
The law, anyway, is as part of the law that says things go north, the surface area to mass decreases.
Is this a segue back to the episode?
We were just talking about
you're talking about laws.
We were talking about how Kit Kats in the surface area.
No, I understand because I was there. Yeah, I'm saying
I didn't see if you know if you saw the connection.
Oh no, I see. Okay, here's the thing: is you had mentioned this law about the animals and heat dispersal and all that stuff,
and
I was trying to create a segue back to our discussion of the episode. Because this has been a bit of a digression.
Yeah, but
especially on an episode that is a condensed episode.
You started talking about all that candy talk,
huh?
Yeah, I mean, huh?
You know, what do you expect me to do if you mention candy? We're going to have to discuss candy a little bit. And they don't get a lot of candy associated with Star Trek.
What?
No, okay.
Whatever.
All right, Neera's great lawyer. Neera's a great lawyer, and she says all sorts of great lawyer stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hard to discuss because she just has whole, like, long quotes that are good quotes. And your best thing to do there is to go watch the episode.
If all the animals have the same average density, then body mass should be proportional to the cube of the animal's linear size, ml to the third, while surface area should vary proportionately to l to the second. Therefore, the animal's surface area should be proportional to m to the 2/3. Did that answer your question?
Yes, of course it did. Of course. I mean, I'm not dumb.
Cool. I'm with
Danny
you.
Danny Schoendahler.
Schoendahler?
Schoendahler.
Okay, Schoendahler. Back to the episode. Some more stuff
happened.
Okay,
back to the episode.
What
click,
the else
click,
happened?
Click.
They said you're
clicking the buttons.
They said you're under oath a lot. That was their that's
a version
an order.
Of that's an order.
Yeah, they I'll play all the time.
You're under oath. Although the context is different, the words are different.
But it's
the
same
idea. Sort of the meaning is different.
It's the same sort of cliche style where they just throw it in there for extra words to make it to try to add drama to the situation.
Okay. It's reinforcing the fact that it's a courtroom thing and everybody's under oath and you got to tell the truth.
Right.
And you got that little white disc.
See if you can guess what three of the four of these have in common other than the under oath bit. I'm going to play four of them. They're all pretty, well, they're all about 10 seconds. Shit. Well.
How long were you aware that you were harboring an Illyrian on your ship, Captain? I will remind you, you are on the stand, and under oath, you do not have the option of not answering.
All right, you've made your point.
All right, there's one.
If you had known Unichin Riley was genetically modified, would you have sponsored her application to Starfleet Academy? You're under oath, sir.
There's two.
You managed to keep your status a secret for so many years. It's surprising they found out now.
I don't.
Who turned you into Starfleet? I remind you, you are under oath.
And?
When did Captain Pike become aware of your status? I will also remind the commander that she is under oath.
It was a little subtle, but can you think of the three of four things that had in common?
They were all Una.
No.
Okay.
It was, three of the four of them said, I remind you, you're under oath.
Yeah.
So it's not even just you're under oath. They said, I remind you
right.
three times.
Yeah.
They could have switched it up a little. It's not a big deal.
I mean, you're acting like it's a big deal.
No, it's just, I you know, it's just like when I get sidetracked with like these things I hear, it's like, they play those a lot in a lot of TV shows. It's not, every TV show does it. Everyone does it. And so it's not
deal. Do you really have to remind somebody that they're under, I'm like, everybody knows
that's
they're in court.
That's
it's like they took that oath. They remember.
Well,
Jesse, that's exactly what
right,
I'm saying.
Right.
What was the name of the asshole Vulcan fella?
Pasak.
So the asshole Vulcan fella, who, by the way, that actor,
Vice Admiral,
did a great fucking job playing a total piece of shit Vulcan.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike Chip Vulcan, who was all chill. He seemed like a pretty rad dude, Chip Vulcan. Even when he got angry, he was like being all like chill angry.
Chill angry.
But
I'm hangry. I'm chillaxin. I'm chill angry.
but Vice, was it Vice Admiral Patak?
Vice Admiral
Pasak?
Vice Admiral Zach Morris. Psak. We got to say it in the Vulcan accent. Psak. Psak. Okay.
Vice Admiral Psak. When he said the whole, like, you're under oath, they also had the added thing where he all, like, glances down at the little white truth-telling disc, or, you know, the presumed. They never stated outright in either the court-martial or this episode, but the implication is there's some sort of lie detector stuff, or I don't know, maybe it, like, zaps your hand.
Yeah, I know, there's no way to know.
But they had that whole, the camera all like pans down and like zooms in on it and be like, oh, you really can't fucking lie now.
Yeah, right. He's expecting them to, because he's a Vulcan and humans are illogical. Speaking of Psak, this is, they've been doing this thing with Spock where they've been giving him like the funny business.
Yes. Yeah.
They've been giving him the funny stuff.
And this was very funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was...
Although he is the locus of the joke, but the actual humor is coming from Mbenga and Ortegas.
Yeah, it's like, well, he's the unwitting sort of like butt of a joke, because it's like this, it's like, yeah, people, because it happens in the next episode too, actually. Yes. It does. So yeah, there was this after Psak.
I regret that you had to witness that.
Yeah, so there was, yeah, that whole outburst.
Well, it was already funny, like Ortega's whole thing. Yeah. Like they're all just gonna hang out. She's like just
Vulcan bros.
Like, are you messing with me?
mimicking the
logical,
you know, playing out this little Vulcan play, which was fun.
That would be enjoyable.
And then, of course, Mbenga coming in with his insight, not only of people generally, but remember Mbenga's whole background, going back to the original time when the character first appeared on TOS, he was able to help out Spock because that character of Mbenga spent like 6 months on Vulcan or a year on Vulcan, something like that, learning all about Vulcan medicine and stuff. Similar to Dr. Phlox hanging out with the humans. It was the same kind of deal, right? And so Mbenga has a special awareness of Vulcan culture. And that's one reason why they've paired him a couple times with Spock, like in the Broken Circle, when he's giving Spock some advice and says, like, look, I know the deal with you Vulcans, because I had to hang out with you guys.
I know y'all's crazy.
And he plays that role again here as being able to identify that Spock hates this fucking Psak guy.
Right. It was humorous.
It was humorous, but it also set us up to hating this guy.
Yeah.
Before we even see
him
in action.
That's true. That's true. It did. That was a pretty smooth setup.
And it was a flip it and reverse it, because it was using humor to define a character who later would become quite a dramatic threat to the characters we love, not just Una, but Captain Pike and potentially others by extension.
Mm-hmm. So there was the other, can you guess what the other, you gotta know what the other funny Spock moment was.
You gotta know. You gotta
have
an opinion.
Gilbert and Sullivan musicals.
Right.
Yes. Which is a reference to one of the short treks.
An affinity for Gilbert and Sullivan musicals.
It's a cute short trek, which shows the first day Spock arrives on the Enterprise. And he gets stuck in an elevator or, turbo lift with Una. And has a nice little interaction with them.
So
I'm still sad that they're not making more short treks, because those are fun.
Those were fun. So I'm trying to figure out where to go with this.
All right.
Were they aware?
I'm getting excited.
It seems like they were aware, but were they, the writers, aware that maybe I'm just too cynical, but I was just...
Maybe you're the model of a modern major general.
Yes. There you go. Nice segue.
Animal, vegetable... I'm the very model of a modern major general. Animal vegetable. How am I forgetting the fucking line?
Don't forget the lime and the coconut.
I'm the very model of a modern major general. I've information, animal, vegetable, and mineral. That's what it is. All right. Sorry. I just had to sort that out for my own thing.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
I got to be able to sleep at night.
Don't you think we should sidebar this conversation?
It's
very convenient that you of all people have that fucking recording.
Yep, a lot of things are convenient. Right. I put in the work to get to the top.
You will have no disagreement from over here, sir.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No disagreement whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So buttons.
So when the writers,
yeah.
I'm wondering if they were aware that for you, if I was too cynical about it, but yeah. I was like, kind of like heard that line. And I was like, meh, meh, you know, and I was like wondering, was like, were they going for that? Or was it, cause that's how I read it. Now I don't think,
can you clarify exactly what you meant by meh, meh?
You know, it's like, you know, like when he's like, oh, you're not, I'm actually being dishonest with you, sir. I'm being dishonest. He's like, oh, and everyone in the courtroom's like, oh, you're being dishonest. No, that's what it was. What did he say? What the fuck did Spock say?
What he said was that Pasok, was it Pasok who was asking, like, did you, or Batel was asking, like,
yes.
What did you think of her?
Did
she ever lie to you?
Yes.
Did you ever think she was hiding?
Thank you.
Did she seem like she was hiding something?
Yeah, but Spock wouldn't be like, I was lying, because Vulcans, according to themselves, don't lie. So
according to themselves. I know, it's so great.
So, but
it's like Peggy Hill. Peggy Hill thinks, in my opinion, the day after Thanksgiving is the busiest shopping day of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, Spock...
Peggy Hill. Yep. Spock, Peggy Hill.
Peggy
Spock,
and Meatball.
Steve
is
Spock.
Tablespoon of orange juice in the... Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So he goes, Spock goes, yes, I did get the sense that she was hiding something. And that's when everyone was like, what? What? It was like this big... It was like, oh my gosh. Oh yeah. My gosh. It's like, okay, there's a joke coming, because it's like everyone's like...
There's a joke.
It's like, why would they put Spock on the stand just so he could like fuck their shit up, you know? But then he goes...
An affinity for Gilbert and Sullivan musicals.
And then I'm like,
now you've said it a couple times. I'm right here in the room with you. I'm seeing your body language and the funny face you're making. I'm still not 100% sure how to interpret that. I took it as, it was funny humor. It was like a silly humor.
I'll call it
silly humor.
I'll cut out all the extra fluff. Just.
Okay.
An affinity for Gilbert and Sullivan musicals.
All right, thank you. That clears it all up. That clears it up entirely. All right,
it was a funny and cute moment, but then he even gave a little like eyebrow thing. I know it was very aware of what it was doing.
No, I'm telling you, Dan. Now that you've explained, now that third time was the charm.
It's time.
I've
to move
got
on.
It, and it's time for a break. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will conclude our discussion of
Ad Astra.
Thank you.
Prospera.
Thank you. Thank you. Be right back.
All right.
All right. We're
all back. Right.
To the stars through hardship.
We're back. We're back.
It's good to be back.
I'm going to try not coughing quite as much, but for some reason.
That must have been awful for you.
It was pretty bad because it seems like it's triggered.
Throat.
Listen. Here's when the coughing is triggered. It's triggered, and I've got like a Ricola in my mouth and all that. But it's the coughing is only triggered when I try to say the name of the episode, which is Ad.
Oh no!
What the fuck's wrong with you?
Because it's that sound. It's...
What's going on with you, man?
When you make that sound in the English language, you have to use part of your
dishonorable dismissal.
Dan, can you say it? How does it work when you say it?
Ad Astra Per Aspera.
That's not you.
Oh. That's cheating.
Ad Astra Per Aspera. Oh, no, I messed it up. I can't do it either.
Is it a scherzo or a spercho?
Is it what? Scherzo?
Scherzo or spercho? It's another King of the Hill joke.
Oh, yeah, right. I missed that one.
When Peggy Hill insists that the truck driver speaks Spanish.
I don't know. No languages.
Ad Astra Per Aspera. I keep seeing the sound file that's 1 second long, and it just says, it sing. And I don't know what that is, so I'm going to play it.
Lieutenant Noonien Singh.
Oh, Lieutenant Singh. Oh, I thought it said it sing because, you know, the lowercase L's and the uppercase I's look the same in certain fonts, which is the stupidest, but you know, okay. That wasn't that.
It's like when people talk about AI and I'm like, Al?
Who's Al?
Who's this Al they're talking about?
Who's this Al motherfucker?
What else? There was some other stuff. There was some
odds
other
and
stuff.
Ends. Odds and ends.
There was some stuff that happened that was pretty neat, and I liked it.
In addition to other stuff, we can also just sort of like have our sort of what our overall thoughts were. I think we've already implied it somewhat. This is one of those episodes where I think it's a wonderful episode. I really enjoyed the episode. The acting was great. I thought the writing was, for the most part, very tight. The little speeches were super Star Trek. The fact that it was a courtroom drama was super Star Trek.
It was super Star Trek.
That it was all super talky. I like that. I love that. It felt like old school Star Trek where they had no problem like not having a bunch of
action. It was a Star Trek kind of solution. And stuff.
Yes, and it was not a perfect solution. It was sort of a thread the needle kind of thing that still preserves the. So this law they're talking about that prevents people from being genetically engineered, it was put into place because of the whole Khan Noonien Singh business, right? All the genetically engineered evil horribleness that happened in the past. We know it still exists in the future because characters on Deep Space Nine have to deal with it. Characters on Star Trek Prodigy have to deal with it. This is not something that's gone away. So part of the interest in watching this episode was like, well, how are they going to do this? How are they going to get Una back on the ship? We presume so because she's a main character, but it's like, how are they going to do it? While maintaining what we know to be the case 80, 100 years in the future. And this was an elegant way to do that, to kind of have that story, have your cake and eat it too kind of thing, which was really cool. And there's a lot that's great about it. It also makes it, you know, it's a little, you know, it's like, yeah, it was really great. It was a good episode. It also wasn't 100% perfect. As great as the final speech was that Neera gives, there were a couple things that I thought were like a little, it didn't 100% connect. The main one being that she talks about like going through all the requirements for asylum.
Oh, right.
And one of the requirements being like asking for it is like, I don't know. It might be a bit of a stretch to say that Una was asking for asylum. Mm-hmm. She didn't really do that.
No. I guess because she turned herself in, which it wasn't clear to me when Neera found out that she turned her, that it was her that
she deduced now, as
because,
much.
Okay, yeah, and she deduced it right, but I'm wondering when, because there was a moment with Laan where she was like, Laan was coming up to her and saying, you know, hey, I think
it might be me.
It might be she didn't say
they might
that.
Have spied on my shit.
She didn't know that at first. At first she was like, I think I'm on to something, which she presented a little too cavalierly, I think, because like,
well, that was another aspect that was a little confusing because we later find out that she has a concern that she might have accidentally been the person to reveal it. But at the beginning of the episode, she's trying to get into everyone's personal logs. So was she trying to find somebody else who mentioned
it? And she didn't have anything like really to work on.
Wouldn't Uhura have found her personal log?
Uhura, by the way, was awesome. She just like turned her down. Like she was, Laan was trying to like pull rank, and she was just like, "No, what are you gonna do?"
And there was that great line where it's like, "I know you want to help her because she was your mentor, but like you're my mentor, and I'm gonna help you by not fucking up your career by doing some illegal shit."
But she was a little too confident about the answer before, like she was like, I'm onto something. She should have probably spent some more time researching before she went to Neera. But then also, it was kind of questionable that she made that log in the first place, like admitting her guilt, because she said, oh, I was angry at the time when I made that personal log, which is understandable. But you'd think, I mean, maybe not. I don't know what I'd do, but I'd like to think that if I was really that, like, if later back I went, I was like, oh, that's a fucked up message, I would probably go and delete it or something like that.
That girl seems to get angry.
So it seems like she could have at least, she could have deleted it if she could have avoided this whole thing.
Well,
but, you know. I think
she couldn't delete it in the sense that Laan was thinking that somebody got a hold of her log already. So like deleting it would be meaningless if she presumed.
This is presuming that they got the log from her before she felt bad about creating it in the first place.
Yes.
That's what this is presuming.
Precisely.
So.
And it's also presuming.
So who knows?
And I think it is a fair presumption that Laan's assumption, going back to your question about why would she even have a log about this in the first place, is perhaps people are pretty confident that their personal logs are not going to be like pried into except under extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, still.
And she wasn't expecting an extraordinary circumstance.
She'll think differently next time. That's for certain. That's for certain.
That is for certain.
Extraordinary.
But yeah, so there was a little bit there where it's like, okay, you know, I get what you're saying.
Oh, and
but Una did not actually ask for asylum overtly. Oh, so that part was kind of a missing component.
So what I was getting at was Neera was talking about like how she deduced that Una turned herself in, and I'm wondering if it's at the point where Laan finally came to her and Laan was like, I think it was me, and then Neera's like, it wasn't you, and then because she says, what does she say exactly? She says like thank you to Laan or something. I don't know what she says to
Lon. Well, she has that great scene with Lon where she absolves Lon of responsibility or feeling like a monster or an augment, you know? It's like augment, monster.
Lon goes, someone who could gain, they're talking about like, who would do this basically? And Lon's like, I don't know, someone who could gain from exposing the truth. And Nira says, my thoughts exactly. Thank you. You've been very helpful. Yes. So I was wondering, how is she helpful other than maybe that was the moment she figured out unless she went into the episode knowing it already.
I think it could be that moment. I think you've just provided very good evidence for why it could potentially be that moment. I think, although the evidence is slimmer, I think she knew it when she first met with Una in prison.
Right, so that's the other, one.
She looks at Una and she sees Una fiddling with her Starfleet badge. I think that's the point where Nira is like, oh, fucking, she did it. Mm-hmm. And because that's her whole defense, from the beginning to the end, like, even though the show dramatically, and this is another argument you could have where Nira could have just explained all this to Una ahead of time instead of having to do it the dramatic way and all on the stand and stuff. But, you know, okay, this is a TV show. You're supposed to be dramatic. Mm-hmm. The impression you get is that Nira went into that first day of court knowing exactly where she was hoping to drive things in the end, that she was orchestrating the whole questioning Robert April as aggressively as she was to orchestrate that specific response. And it wasn't as Una was accusing her of being just grandstanding for the purpose of political, you know, for her own advocacy.
Then it makes me wonder, then I'm not quite clear why Nira was like, said, thank you. You've been very helpful to Lon. Cause how did she actually help
maybe
her? Lon was a little unclear. She was like, why do I feel like I've just been hit by a shuttle? Because what that makes you think is it makes you think Lon feels like she's been hit by a shuttle because Nira pulled some lawyer ball on lawyer flip dudo on her.
lawyer flip dudo.
So
you said dudo.
You said doodos.
Yeah, I did. It makes you think she played some lawyer stuff on Lon to trick her into like saying something to help her case, but it's not really clear what that is though.
There's a few parts here and there that are clearly. They've inserted some stuff that's just for the drama of it, but when you poke too closely at it, it sort of stops making a whole lot of sense. And that is one of them. Because you could also argue that Nira was initially started out grandstanding, because there's evidence for that in the episode too. Because it's almost like at the end, Nira is almost saying, okay, I switched tactics partway through because we had that. Originally, I was going for the advocacy, embarrassing Starfleet tactic. For the whole public show, and then I talked with Una. I felt, you know, she made some good points. I felt bad, and then I switched tactics to actually trying to defend Una. So there is there's evidence of both things in the text of the show. So it is a little confused from that perspective. Now, very minorly confused, I might say, because I think the through line is still very clear, which is there is an unjust law that is unfairly punishing people. And it's using, and this happens all the time in the real world, you create a scenario in which a person is forced to break a second law, a separate law, in order to avoid being charged with the actual main scary law. In this case, Una was charged with lying on her form.
Did you say Una? You said La Una.
La Una.
La'an. Unan.
La'un. Una. Una is effectively getting in trouble for like not filling out her tax form right, kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you are breaking this little law because there are other laws that are discriminating against you and forcing you to do that, right? It's like if you're somebody who likes smoking weed and you like lie on a job application that says, oh, I never smoked weed at all. It's like, yes, you are lying on the application, but it's because the question's a shitty question in the first place because it's not important, right?
Yeah.
Now
that's a whole gray area though of like how you can sort of.
Of
like
course it's a gray area, but it's because the law is a gray area.
Yeah, right.
And that's partly what, maybe the message isn't super strong in this episode, but I think what they're trying to get at is that with Nira's whole little speech at the end about the law being an ideal, it's like, yeah, you want to have some structure, you want to have some set of codified rules that people should follow. However, those rules can themselves either be unjust, even if they're well-intentioned, or even if they're not always unjust, they might become unjust because mm-hmm. of changing circumstances mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, in the end, I thought a powerful episode of Star Trek. It's definitely going to be, I think, considered by a lot of people to be one of those classic ones that you can go back. Mm-hmm. And it's also dealing with a very contemporary message, which is there are people in the real world who have to hide who they are. A society creating systematic structures designed to squelch people's self-expression and people's expression of their true selves.
Like when Dan has to hide that he's Dan.
Yeah. Happens more than you'd think.
It does. Like when he's at the grocery store, he's got that little name tag that says Steve on it.
Speaking of...
Aren't you Dan? No, I'm Steve. No, I'm Steve.
Speaking of making Starfleet look bad, like... So her whole, she had a weird strategy at first where she tried to make April look bad, but then it all got stricken from the record. But it's kind of like, I always wondered, you can strike things from the record, but you can't make people unhear what they've
exactly,
heard.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting.
It's a tactic.
And then there was a part where...
Let the record show.
Una said that she was when...
You're my number one Una.
Yeah.
Number one Una. You're my number one Una.
People keep requesting
Prime Una.
We have to do a whole episode. When are we going to do the Rascals episode?
I don't know.
We have to wait for the algorithm to.
It feels like we've already done it.
Anyways, so Una said that
Una Chin Riley.
Neera told Una that Admiral April was going to be on the stand, and then Una's like, "Oh, that's good, right?" And then Neera's like, "Well, no, because actually they have a strategy." I mean. Isn't that kind of like, that's kind of like self-evident, right? The defense isn't going to bring up a witness. I mean, they're not going to bring up a witness that's going to fuck their case up, you know? Like,
you mean the prosecution?
The prosecution, yeah, yeah. The prosecution wouldn't bring up April unless they had a tactic, which is exactly what Neera said.
What you're saying is you think that Una is stupid?
No, I just think that the writers...
Sounds to me like you think Una is stupid.
I think that the writers...
think that Una's stupid.
No.
Oh, you're talking about the exposition that for helping the audience along.
Yes.
Inadvertently might make Una look stupid.
Yeah.
Which is why you have to be very careful with exposition. It is sometimes necessary to convey information swiftly to the audience to orient them to what they need to be oriented to for the purpose of the story that's about to unfold, the tale that's being told.
Yeah, I think people get it.
But every now and then, it does result in a character looking dumb.
Yeah, I would think, like, you know, most people would probably... I mean, it's interesting, the next episode, they trust us with time travel logic, but they don't trust us with the lawyer, the TV show lawyer. And I'm not a lawyer, but I know television, and I know that's always the case.
But you play one on a podcast.
Yeah, basically. And by the way,
our sister podcast called It's Got the Law, which Dan is a sole host of. It's a solo podcast.
Their whole strategy turned out to just be like, let's get someone who loves her to say he wouldn't want to have her had he known who she was. That was their whole strategy. It wasn't like anything. It wasn't like a super strategy. I mean, it was effective, but Neera was like, there's some mysterious strategy they're using. And it was really just like, no, he likes you to make you think that he would talk good about you, but he's going to say that he wouldn't want you because you boo do 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 do.
Well, and the other...
Designated authority.
All right.
I like how she says that.
Designated authority.
Doesn't Neera sound like she has like a British accent in part of this?
Can't hide.
Sounds like a British accent.
Cannot hide. I did like the idea.
Designated authority.
I like the idea that was presented.
Designated authority.
From a practical perspective, I don't know. It sounds a little overly simplistic, but the whole idea of dividing a city in half and putting all the Illyrians on one side and then the non-Illyrians on the other, but then like some Illyrians that can pass. It's like, yeah, I mean, things sort of like that have happened. I mean, I guess they didn't want to say they weren't creating a ghetto, even though they were in other ways, you know, I'm talking about, you know, like a Jewish ghetto in Warsaw type thing. in every other way, the implication was mimicking that, was rounding people up and confining them or constricting them to certain areas of a town. Mm-hmm. In this case, they tried to keep it more even. And I'm guessing they're trying to keep it more even because of the whole choice that Una's family made versus Neera's family. And that's what caused
Neera's
the initial...
Neera's mad because Una, even though Una stood up for her brother, she wouldn't stand up for her people or something.
Well, it was another thing that was a little odd because there was this animosity between them, but it was unclear...
She was able to hide her abilities, so she did hide her abilities, yeah. And she didn't, like, bring it out, and she should have lived among... After yeah. her brother got killed, even though Una did stand up for her brother, after he got killed, she felt she should have come to her side and live, like, honest and open about who she was. Look, and instead, she sold out, basically.
I agree with the... I understand that. I think that what weakens it a little bit is that Una, when all that happened, Una was a child. And she was, it was not like she had much agency in the thing.
She still joined Starfleet.
Yes, exactly. She still joined, there's that aspect.
But we are starting to learn, Neera is starting to see that Starfleet's not all bad, you know?
Yeah, again, another potentially confusing thing is like, did Neera change her mind about this?
Yeah, not quite, but it seemed like she was a little less like, fuck you.
Yeah, I guess so. And certainly, I really thought that was a powerful ending scene. Where she's looking out over the ship and she's saying, like, look, all you motherfuckers are totally cool with having Una as your commander and taking orders from her, and that's super fucking rad, right? And she's like, that's a start. And I thought that was really excellent, right? And it was an interesting sort of mirror image, but parallel to Una describing the Starfleet officers who came and how different they were and how diverse they were from all these different planets, and how that gave her the idea that she could be able to join that organization and be safe and live her own identity truly while interacting with people who have come from very different planets and that sort of thing.
A law does not make something just.
I like how she says just.
A law does not make something just.
I didn't mean to pay it a second time, but there we go. Too bad.
All right. I think that should do it for that episode.
That's just it.
Of Star Trek.
Hey,
it was a good one.
Hey guys, what are you doing tomorrow? You know what I want to do?
Shall we play a round of Kalto this weekend?
That would be most enjoyable.
Yeah, damn right.
Or whatever she says.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's actually what she says.
Logical.
Logical indeed. Okay.
Vulcan Bros.
I thought that one would land harder, but it didn't land that hard.
You mean here on the podcast or in the episode?
In the podcast.
Why don't you play it again? Give Jesse and I an opportunity to respond in a sort of a more boisterous fashion.
Well, I should have picked a better context.
All right. Well, let's try this context right now where we're sort of calling you out on it.
Okay. So you guys are like talking about how you went away and
we went away on vacation and then we came back and Dan. And plays recording sometimes.
And I was here by myself, and you guys keep talking about being away.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, we were like on a trip.
Vulcan Bros.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys. Fuck you guys. Shut up. Shut up.
Do you have any other little recordings to play?
Shut up. Don't you feel bad for me? Do you feel bad for me?
I feel great for you. What I do feel is I feel joy getting to see you again after a few weeks because, you know, it does suck to not get together and do these recordings. So I'm very excited that we're back recording podcasts, even if we're recording a bunch of ketchup podcasts.
But do you feel my feelings?
Ketchup.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You discovered empathy.
Yes, I do.
I set you up, man.
I mean, maybe.
You were playing along. You were playing. You were being very generous
You were being generous. I set you up. I was like, I don't know if that counts. You're just saying some shit. Yeah. Okay, that'll do it for us.
Because you feel my feelings.
This week.
You discovered empathy.
Couple of things to note.
That's how the joke goes.
Social media. We're right now, we're enduring the social media wars. We don't know if you're listening to this episode in the future.
We fight.
You'll know where things have, whether the dust has settled or not. But right now, we are in the throes of the hardcore social media wars. Twitter's in flames, and all these new things are coming up. The long and the short of it is that you can find us on pretty much any social media thing that at least adults are on.
Yes, that would be enjoyable.
At It's Got Star Trek. And that includes not only Twitter, but also Instagram, Blue Sky Social, Mastodon.
What are all these words I've never heard before?
Threads? Can you believe it? Threads?
I feel like I'm speaking a different language.
Yeah. Facebook and YouTube, of course. Don't slouch on YouTube. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to us there. If you wouldn't mind, that'd be great. You can like and subscribe in whatever business you use. That would be helpful. Reviews are super fantastic.
Subscribe to our zine.
We don't have a zine. No. Maybe Dan can put together a zine.
Yeah, we should make a zine.
A Dan zine.
Dan zine.
Glenn Dan zine. Well, but yes, that's the social media stuff.
I got something to say.
We are coming up. We are coming up on our 200th episode. We're gonna have to do a little fun extravaganza there. So we've been requesting folks to send in whether you know if you want to send in an email
extravaganza
or even better a sound recording. You can praise us. You can critique us. You can ask.
Why
us
not?
You can ask us a question. A question you might have had for either Dan, Jesse, or myself, or all three of us. Whatever you'd like to do, it'd be great. Send us those questions in audio or email style. Our email is feedback.
Oh, gosh.
No.
Okay. I can't
do it. Don't you think we should sidebar this conversation?
No, I gotta get the email out. The email is.
Yes, that would be enjoyable.
Jesus Christ,
call
man.
An ambulance.
What's going on?
Feedback.
Augment.
Feedback.
Naughty.
I'm not an augment. I'm not a monster. I'm not a monster.
Augment.
Monster.
Naughty. Augment.
Feedback. Naughty. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Naughty. Augment.
You can send those our way. Next episode, we will be discussing tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And so...
How do you please to these charges of...
Not guilty.
I think that's it. Okay. So it's not next week. It's actually going to be like right now, right? Basically real
not
soon.
Not tomorrow.
In the thread. It's just the next one in the thread.
Or tomorrow.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So we're going to talk to you real, real fucking soon.
Real fucking soon, man.
Fucking bro.
There's so much It's Got Star Trek.
So much. All right. We will talk to you soon. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Logical.
Whoops. Bye-bye.
Yes, I did get the sense that she was hiding something.
What was she hiding?
An affinity for Gilbert and Sullivan musicals.